The time is 6 o'clock. This is Radio Ghana, the news presented by Samuel Issa
and Ibrahim Kwakin.
In the headlines, Ghana Medical Association and other health workers refuse to sign conditions of service document. Roads and Highways Ministry begins sanctioning contractors who construct poor roads. GBC Director General reiterates need for TV license fee to enable the corporation fulfill its public service mandate. Ghana to strengthen relations with multilateral partners to accelerate development. And woman and her baby rescued 5 days after plane crash in Colombian jungle. First, a summary with Ibrahim Kwating.
The Ghana Medical Association, GMA, and other health workers unions yesterday refused to sign a document on their conditions of service. This happened at a meeting scheduled by the Ministry of Health in Accra to facilitate the signing. The unions claim they have not seen the document to know its content and begin negotiations for the agreement and will therefore not be pushed to sign it. Roads and Highways Minister Alhaji Inusa Fuseni says his ministry has begun sanctioning contractors who use inferior materials for construction to reduce costs. In an interview with Radio Ghana, Alhaji Fuseni said the situation has rendered most roads more trouble. He disclosed that the government has disbursed 74 million cedis to settle debts owed contractors. The Director General of GBC, Major Albert Donchebe, says financial incapacitation has undermined the corporation's ability to produce captivating, elevating and fulfilling content for viewers and listeners with TV licenses in view as a catalyst for change for GBC. Major Donchebe says failure to review the fees when the city depreciated from 1993 to 2014 has severely impacted the capacity of the corporation to execute its mandate. And a young mother, Maria Nelly Murillo, and a baby have been found alive 5 days after their plane crashed in the jungle of Western Colombia. A Colombian Air Force chief described their survival as a miracle. Maria Nelly Murillo, 18, and her one-year-old son were found by rescuers close to where their small six-cylinder plane crashed in Choco.
GBC is mastering the airwaves with nothing but quality news and programming.
The news in detail. The Ghana Medical Association, GMA, and other health workers' unions yesterday refused to sign a document on their conditions of service. This happened at a meeting scheduled by the Ministry of Health in Accra to facilitate their signing. The unions claimed they have not seen the document to know its content and begin negotiations for the agreement. At about 2 p.m. yesterday, representatives of health workers' unions comprising the GMA, the Ghana Registered Nurses Association, GRNA, Government and Hospital Pharmacists Association, GOSPA, and Health Service Workers Union were at the ministry following a phone call from the Accountant General and the Registrar General's Department for the meeting. They claimed although they did not know the details of the meeting, it was rumored that it was the signing of conditions of service. Deputy General Secretary of the GMA, Justice Yankson, said the unions did not come to sign a document but for negotiations on the conditions of service. The technical committee working on the document containing the conditions of service for public sector health workers presented a draft to the sector minister and the Minister of Employment and Labour Relations, Haruna Idrisu, on 2nd June to pave the way for the negotiations. Meanwhile, the PRO of the ministry, Tony Goodman, has apologized to the media for the botched meeting.
One deferred that comes with the rainy season is the issue of bad roads. Some roads become gullies, rendering them difficult to ply. The Minister for Roads and Highways, Alhaji Inusa Fuseni, who paid a visit to the studios of Radio Ghana, attributed the problem of bad roads to contractors using inferior materials. In order to cut costs, he said the ministry has begun dealing with the issue by strengthening supervision and monitoring, as well as meting out sanctions to contractors who construct bad roads. Alhaji Inusa Fuseni also disclosed that 74 million cedis has been disbursed to settle debts owed contractors. He spoke to Agatha Samoa.
The present downpour, we're in the rainy season, and so the continuous rains that we had in the previous week also contributed to damaging some of the road infrastructure within the national capital and other parts of the country. Because the continuous rains soaked the soil, areas that were already exposed. I mean, loosening up the base, and then drivers driving on those parts of the roads, extend the potholes into gullies. And so that's the state of the road, consequent upon the rains that came.
Well, referring to the rains, what accounts for that, that whenever it rains, the roads get damaged?
Oh, there are many things. Many. First of all, I've always said that we must put what is happening within the context of the climate change. I mean, you see, people, we can no longer predict when the rains will come. And when they are coming, they come in torrents. And so because of that, we must learn how to mitigate the hardships that will fall us consequent upon the torrents that come. And so when we construct our drains, we have to ensure that we don't litter the drains and choke them up. And water, which is supposed to pass through the drains, have to find another way of getting to their final destination. What happened in Accra was largely by reason of human activity. Our drains had been choked. We had silted most of the areas. And so when the water came and caught up unprepared, it flowed into people's homes and caused catastrophic disaster in Accra. So, and when water doesn't flow through its own channel, especially when drains are constructed and water doesn't pass through the drains and overflows the drains, it affects the road that has been constructed. That's why you find gullies emerging on roads, other parts of the roads being washed away because of the fast running water and its contact with the road. So it washes away the bitumen surface, and then also affects the gravel or lateral that we put there before we get to the bitumen surface. So that's what happens.
That was the Minister for Roads and Highways, Alhaji Inusa Fuseini.
The MP for Garu Timpani and a member of the NDC Northern Caucus in Parliament, Dominic Azuma, says that the AMA had notified members of the caucus of the old Fadama demolition, they would have been adequately informed the northern indigents who reside in the affected slum. Mr. Azuma said a visit by the caucus to Sodom and Gomorrah show how vulnerable northerners have been left following the exercise. He said though some of those affected by the demolition agreed to the exercise, they believe AME went beyond the earlier areas demarcated for the exercise, hence affecting unnotified people. Mr. Azuma spoke to Agatha Samwa on Behind the News.
As you are aware, we have oversight responsibility of the Ministry of Local Government and all these agencies. I'm sure we have arranged a meeting with the Chief Executive of AMA, Honorable Okwuondaboy, for him to update us the situation after June 3rd, 3 weeks exactly today, when this unfortunate incident happened. What steps have they taken to address the critical concern, and what role can Parliament as an institution play to support them? So our visit took us straight to AMA's offices, headquarters, were properly briefed by the Chief Executive. He outlined steps taken after the floods, before the floods, during the floods, and after the floods.
So can you tell us some of the steps then?
He has told us that even before the floods, there were engagements. AMA had taken a tour of the city center and all the adjoining community to determine all waterways before the floods, and they identified a number of critical areas. And immediately from there, AMA engaged with those institutions and bodies and individuals so that they should prepare themselves sufficiently for them to be able to move out of those areas.
That was the MP for Garu Timpani and a member of the Northern Caucus in Parliament, Dominic Azuma. Also on the trip to Sodom and Gomorrah was the MP for Tolong and a member of the NPP Northern Caucus in Parliament, Wumbe Wahab Suhini. He spoke on what they gathered from the affected slum.
Government should actually try to put in place measures to house those who are displaced currently. And we should keep to east west to assist those who want to actually go home, because some people are actually displaced. Some people will not want to stay in Accra again, so they should be assisted to get back home. This is the farming season. I know it's a very huge responsibility, and I think government should take a charge of it so that it can assist those who want to go home, at least to go and take up some small farming, at least to prepare them for the future.
How about those who want to stay? Any compensation for them? You talk about assistance to some of those who want to go back home.
Those who want to stay, that the government should see to relocate them, they should settle them. And there should be a program to compensate those who have actually lost property and money in the, this demolition. Currently, even food to eat is a problem. Local government ministry had some presentation to make, but the anxiety of the people was so much that we couldn't even make the presentation.
That was the MP for Tolong and a member of the MPP Northern Caucus in Parliament, Wumbi Wahab Suhini.
Some old men and women between the ages of 60 and 80 yesterday took to the streets in Kumasi to demonstrate over the harsh economic conditions in Ghana. The group, numbering about 100, dressed in red and black attire, walked from the cultural center in Bantama through Pampaso Prisons Roundabout, Malcolm Road, Aseda House, Asafo Interchange, Labour Roundabout, and headed towards Abbey's Park at Ashanti New Town. They explained they were demonstrating against the high cost of living, corruption, the power outages currently being experienced in the country, collapse of businesses, and the hiking fuel prices. The demonstration that Mrewa Isun, meaning the aged are crying, took many onlookers by surprise, as it was deemed unprecedented in Ghana's democracy with regards to demonstrations. They threatened to strip naked and march to the Flagstaff House in Accra if the harsh economic conditions remained the same. When the group got to the Labour Roundabout, the climate became a Herculean task for the old ladies. They moved few steps and stopped, moved and stopped, and requested for water before continuing the march.
The Director General of GBC, Major Albert Donchebe, says financial incapacitation has undermined the corporation's ability to produce captivating, elevating, and fulfilling content for viewers and listeners, with the TV licensing fee being viewed as the catalyst of change for GBC. The Director General stated that failure to review the fees when the CD depreciated from 1993 to 2014 severely impacted the capability of the corporation to execute its mandate. Taking his turn in a series of lectures to mark the corporation's 80th anniversary, Major Donchebe said GBC has evolved from a colonial broadcasting entity to a state broadcaster committed to nation building and plays a crucial role in the continuing struggle against colonialism. He said as a state broadcaster, GBC was required to contribute significantly towards welding, molding, and harmonizing society. Iradna Paha reports.
The four previous personalities who have delivered lectures as part of activities to mark GBC's 80th anniversary spoke on the following topics: the role of the state broadcaster in a commercially competitive environment, the relevance of public service broadcasting, a milestone on quality broadcasting, and public service broadcasting at the crossroads. The idea of these topics is to evaluate the role of GBC as a state broadcaster in an era of competition and the emergence of private media institutions. While some lecturers believe GBC should change its core agenda to meet the current trend and test in broadcasting, others believe the game could be played in an environment where the state broadcaster could charge for the services rendered while still playing its core role. The fifth in the series of lectures was delivered by the Director General, Major Albert Donchebe. His topic was public service broadcasting, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Major Donchebe said public service broadcasting must be predicted over a period at any point in time.
He who pays the piper calls the tune. This is probably succinctly appropriate in reference to public service broadcasting. Where does the Ghana Broadcasting Corporation stand in the community of public service broadcasting stations? Act 449 triggered the journey of transformation of GBC from the ugliness of a state broadcaster to the goodness of public service broadcasting. The journey to full public service commenced with great promise, especially when the TV licensing regulations 1991, LI 1520, unveiled a fairly reasonable TV licensing fee to ensure that GBC could operate without either the overbearing influence of government or the attractions of crass commerciality.
On GBC's financial challenges, the Director General explained its implications on the corporation's programs and contents.
Having identified funding as the biggest obstacle to a public service broadcaster achieving its real and actual status, it is refreshing to announce that after 23 long years, the current parliament finally revised TV license fees upwards a few months ago. The revision of the TV license fee from 30 pesos per annum to 3 Ghana cedis per month for domestic owners of one TV set provides GBC the brightest opportunity to complete the final leg of our three-stage journey from an ugly state broadcaster through a bad hybrid towards the ideal state of good public service broadcaster. As a good public service broadcaster, GBC will be beholden to none but the good citizens of Ghana and dependent on them for survival.
Major Don Chibi made some distinction between the public service broadcaster and others.
It is essential for public service broadcasting to be significantly different from commercial broadcast or state broadcasting in many respects. One line of activity which distinguishes public service broadcasting from the others and also provides a solid and tangible return to a country is education broadcasting. Knowing how passionate Ghanaians are about education, it is surprising that Ghana has never established a national open university as exists in the UK, Nigeria, Malaysia, Thailand, etc.
The board chairman of GBC, Kwame Asante, said the lecture topic will arguably provide a platform for debate on the role of public service broadcasting.
GBC has over the last 20 years been compelled to look critically at its role to be a public service broadcaster, operating in the national interest and for the public good, promoting national development and cohesion, looking for resources and funding, and not become the tool or mouthpiece of the government of the day or the political party. But this has been a major challenge. However, for GBC to operate as a true public service broadcaster, it needs an adequate and independent source of funding.
Chairman of the National Media Commission, Ambassador Cabral Blayamihi, will have the honor to climax the anniversary lectures on the topic Broadcasting, a Vital Tool for National Harmony and Cohesion.
Irabna Paha reporting.
Journalists have been cautioned to safeguard their social media domains because one can be held liable if another person puts across information on their sites that is later found to be defamatory. Furthermore, journalists must also cross-check the facts before publishing items picked from social media platforms. General Manager Newspapers of the Graphic Communication Group, Yabodwa Ebuafo, who gave the caution, said the GGA Code of Ethics is a universally acceptable and functional document that all journalists must access to enhance credibility. Mr. Ebuafo was speaking on the sidelines of an ethics and law training for journalists in Accra.
The Code of Ethics of the GGA is a living document. If journalists can apply themselves to the provisions of the code and with the pluralism of the media in this country, it will be one of the most exciting and functional media that you can ever find anywhere in the world.
Are we not able to look at best practices? Can we not do references and say, how did these people cover this?
It's about what is universally acceptable. You know, within our culture, within us, I do not think that there's any culture, ethnic group in Ghana where the dead is not valued. Every one of us cherish the dead. So if we do cherish the dead, then we would not be treating them the way that we did. So we do not even need to look outside before we advise ourselves that some of the things that we did on June 4th were horrible. You know, and we need to do that. But at the base of it is the individual. Because are people repentant? Are they resented what they did? Or they think that that is what they did and they will do it again? That's where the problem lies. If people will look at it and be remorseful and regret and pledge not to do it again. Because you see, no amount of external criticism will change people unless they take the first step of changing by themselves. No, so ethics begins from the self. And while the individual makes a commitment that never again, then that is a problem. Otherwise, all the thoughts that we are talking, when another one comes, they will go back.
I think that social media also plays a role in this issue of ethics.
Yeah.
How would you expect that as media which cover or use items that we find it on the social media platform?
So we have to be cautious because we should be better than social media. And a lot of the people there, we may not blame them because they have not been trained. I mean, you are just going in and you see some spectacular thing and you just take it and you post it. Yes, he has no sense of appreciating the issues that they are doing. But when we adopt the same kind of thing and put it on our, I mean, we are, to excuse my language, it means that we are behaving more foolish.
This is General Manager Newspapers of the Graphic Communications Group, Yao Bwadu Ayebuaf, in that interview with Rebecca Epe.
This news comes to you from Radio Ghana, Accra, the major stories. Ghana Medical Association and other health workers refused to sign conditions of service document. Roads and Highways Ministry began sanctioning contractors who construct poor roads. GBC Director General reiterates need for TV license fee to enable the corporation fulfill its public service mandate. Ghana to strengthen relations with multilateral partners to accelerate development. And woman and her baby rescued 5 days after plane crash in Colombian jungle. Do stay tuned. Welcome back. Ghana's bid to achieve Millennium Goal 7 will be successful with the improvement of access to clean water and sanitation. Speaking at the First Water Citizens Forum in Accra, a program officer of the European Union, Hervé Dersol, said although Ghana has made significant progress in providing accessible water to 80% of its population, some citizens still use water from unsafe sources. Salom Tali and Rhoda Wilson have more.
Water is an essential resource, a unique source of life for the ecosystem. Access to water is an important development issue of today. This is a challenge the international community will have to face in order to ensure livelihood and the survival of our planet. The UN has recognized access to water as a fundamental human right, stating that right to safe drinking water and sanitation is a human right essential to the full enjoyment of life and all human rights. Despite this, millions of people lack access to safe, sufficient and affordable water. A program officer of the European Union, Hervé Dersol, said the recent cholera outbreak in the country indicates the challenge Ghana is facing in providing safe water in rural and urban areas.
Between June 2014 and February 2015, almost 30,000 were reported infected with cholera, leaving almost 300 people dead. These numbers indicate the complex struggle Ghana is facing to assure proper water and sanitation facilities even in its more developed urban center. Activity like small-scale mining called galamsey or widespread uncontrolled use of fertilizer and agrochemicals close to water bodies form a critical threat to human and environmental health, while rampant deforestation leads to increased evaporation of water resources in regions where now water is even becoming scarce.
Also speaking at the forum, the Greater Accra Regional Chairman of Ghana Coalition of NGOs, Samuel Boateng Arthur, said Ghanaians have not done enough to protect water bodies.
Salom Tali and Rhoda Wilson found that report.
The effect of climate change is real and being felt in the country. It is affecting crop yields, increasing diseases, and the potential for conflict when not well addressed. Researchers who presented their findings on the effects of the phenomenon of food security at an international conference on climate change and development in Accra said climate change is already affecting the quality of crops, the income of farmers, and also compelling them to farm along river banks. The Minister of Fisheries and Aquaculture, Madame Sherry Aite, who opened the conference, said the phenomenon reverses development. Joyce Jechi has more.
Climate change is caused by emission of dangerous gases into the atmosphere over a long period. This change is caused on sea level rise as a result of prolonged rainfall and in some cases drought. Its effect along coastal areas include displacement of coastal communities, hence affecting livelihoods and inducing health-related diseases. Presenting research findings on climate change and food security along the Savannah Transitional Zone, a lecturer at the Department of Agriculture at the University of Ghana, Dr. Suzanne Ajiri, said climate change effects are real.
They think it's slightly higher than they knew, so their local seed is no longer tolerating the temperatures. So we now need seed that is tolerant of higher temperatures. And that is also one of the reasons why yields of maize, of cement.
Dr. Susan Ajiri said low crop yields are compelling farmers to look for severe weather tolerant crops.
In a household, the women are always selling something just to cope. People are traveling out just to cope. People are looking for water so they can cultivate more vegetables. So crops that are more tolerant are being looked for.
Professor Yaintia Mwabedu of the Center for African Wetlands at the University of Ghana noted the importance of capacity building in addressing problems associated with climate change.
That was Joy Jechi reporting.
The Ghana Blind Union, GBU, has asked WAHIC to exempt its members from rewriting the cancelled BECE papers. 5 BECE papers were leaked, prompting WAHIC to cancel them. Speaking to Radio Ghana, the national president, Aishetu Abdul Karim, said the union is not calling for special privileges but a fair playing field. He said apart from the normal frustrations, the blind child has additional issues to contend with at school due to the nature of Braille and the fact that blind children do very little incidental learning. Madame Karim said it takes the blind child at least 3 times longer to read and cover the same material as that of a sighted counterpart. She called on WAHIC, the Ministry of Education, and the GES to take another look at the situation to avoid taking a blanket decision that would negatively affect those who are clearly innocent of the practice.
3 ambassadors to Ghana yesterday bid farewell to President John Mahama and the flag servers in Accra at the end of their duty tour. They are Sherif Umar of Senegal, Margit Thompson of Denmark, and Sharon Bali of Israel. President Mahama said Ghana will continue to collaborate with the country's bilateral and multilateral partners to realize the government's transformational agenda, Cecilia reports.
The first to bid farewell after 5 years of duty tour was Ambassador Umar of Senegal. The government of Senegal sent to Ghana a high-powered delegation to commiserate with Ghanaians and donated $150,000 towards the government's search, rescue and rehabilitation efforts after the June 3 flood and fire disaster. President Mahama was optimistic that the chairmanship of President Macky Sall of ECOWAS will notch higher efforts by the regional body to enhance integration.
I know that with him, ECOWAS is in very safe hands, being a very articulate person and a very fine politician. And so I believe that we're going to see more progress in terms of peace and security in ECOWAS, in terms of integrating the sub-region. He played a very critical role in our negotiations for the common external tariff, which is the first step towards creating a free trade area. And so we believe that taking the next steps towards a free trade area with him as chairman is a good thing.
The outgoing Danish ambassador, Margit Thompson, commended President Mahama for the leadership he provided as ECOWAS chairman and Ghana's decision to host the UN mission on Ebola in Accra to coordinate efforts leading to the containment and eventual declaration of Liberia as Ebola-free. She also commended the president for the swift manner he led ECOWAS to resolve the political turmoil in Burkina Faso. President Mahama was grateful to Denmark for being the first EU country to have redeemed her financial support for the government's budget.
Ghana is becoming a middle-income country, and so we would be transitioning from being a recipient of aid into a partner in trade and investment. And we're trying to build the economic foundation to be able to do that. And as you're aware, that's why we went back into an IMF program. We want to achieve fiscal consolidation so that we can use that as the basis for growing the economy and increasing trade with other countries.
Sharon Bali arrived in Ghana in 2001 and re-established the Israeli embassy in Accra after years of closure. She said the doors of Israel are still open to training Ghanaians in disaster management. President Mahama said Ghana will continue to commit to efforts towards achieving lasting peace in the Middle East.
The University of Ghana Teaching Hospital is going to be a symbol of the friendship between Ghana and Israel. I had the opportunity about 2 weeks ago to visit the site to inspect the work that was going on there, and I was quite impressed with the quality of work that is going on. But one area that we can learn from Israel is in the area of agriculture and aquaculture, and already we have some collaboration, so I want to express appreciation for that.
President Mahama presented each ambassador with their traditional tool and kente. Seti here, reporting for Radio Ghana.
A young mother and her baby have been found alive 5 days after their plane crashed in the jungle of Western Colombia. A Colombian Air Force chief described their survival as a miracle. Maria Nelly Murillo, 18, and her one-year-old son were found by rescuers close to where their small Cessna plane crashed in Choco Province. Miss Murillo had some injuries and burns while her baby appeared to be in good health. The twin-engine plane had been flying from Quibdó, the capital of Choco, to the town of Nuquí on the Pacific coast when it crashed. The cause of the crash is not yet known.
And now to end the news, a look at some of the stories that made the headlines. The Ghana Medical Association, the GMA, Another health workers unions yesterday refused to sign a document on their conditions of service. And the Minister of Roads and Highways, Alhaji Inusa Fuseni, says his ministry have begun sanctioning contractors who use inferior materials for construction to reduce costs. The news was presented by Ibrahim Kwaten
and Samuel Esan in Accra.